In an ever-changing world, Conscious Co-Creation Productions presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence, always remembering life changes. This is radio like you have never felt before. Life Changes with Filippo. And now, your host, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you, John. This is so exciting, and ciao a tutti. I'm so happy to be talking to you all today, and I'm so happy to be receiving your emails, and I promised I wouldn't be reading them at the beginning of every show, and this time I won't, but it's interesting how I've gotten a couple people who don't know me, and that's great. Hopefully there are a lot of people who don't know me, and that have said, I'd like to know you more, And I thought, what better way for people to get to know me more than for me to tell on myself a little bit here at the beginning of this show today? You know, I am learning along with all these great guests and luminaries. I am thrilled to be here in this position getting to learn and grow from the questions that I ask and the answers that they give. And it's just a fascinating show for me. I like it. And so evidently from the emails, you all like it too. So in my process of learning, I have come to learn a few things, like internal chatter could be very, very dangerous thing. So take, for example, I was asked for a friend by a friend to meet him to have a conversation that was supposedly very important to him and something that he needed my help on. And so I agreed to do this, and it was a busy time, but I knew this was important. I knew it was important to him, and I knew that great things could happen if we had this conversation. So I made time for it, and I thought we would be meeting at a particular place, and at the last minute, this friend changed the place. And from what I thought would be a quiet, inspiring kind of place for us to have a connection and a conversation, we ended up at a very loud public place. It was a diner, as a matter of fact. And not only was it a diner, but it was a diner with a bar. And at the bar, there was a television, and the television was playing the Lakers during one of these big games. And so it was not only loud already, but the cheering that went on because the Lakers were doing well, and nothing against the Lakers. I might have even enjoyed the game myself if I wasn't focused on the fact that we had to accomplish something during this time together. And so here I am, and my friend starts to order food, and I don't because I want to stay focused, and I'm seeing the waiter come and go and people cheering and him turning around and looking at the TV. And, you know, at one point he apologized, and I thought, wow, you know, obviously I'm not important to him, or this conversation isn't as important to him as I thought. And then I think, well, either that or he doesn't value my time or what I'm going to say. And why did it have to be here? And why did it have to be now? And this conversation that I was having in my head, I started to think of, gosh, wouldn't it be great if there was just peace and quiet so we could connect and actually have the conversation that we came here to have? Because that's what I thought we were supposed to be doing. And I thought of a story that I had heard a while back that I had referenced several times. And in my head, while I'm supposed to be connecting with my friend having a conversation, I'm having a chatter going on. I'm conversing with myself. So I'm not even in the conversation. And this story came to mind, and I'm glad it did because it focused me back. And that's the whole crux of what I'm sharing with you all. The story is this. There was once a king who offered a prize to the artist who would paint the best picture of peace. Many artists tried. The king looked at all the pictures, but there were only two he really liked, and he had to choose between them. One picture was of a calm lake. The lake was a perfect mirror for peaceful, towering mountains all around it. Overhead was a blue sky with fluffy white clouds. And all who saw this picture thought that it was a perfect picture of peace. The other picture had mountains, too, but these were rugged and bare. Above was an angry sky from which rain fell, in which lightning played, and down the side of the mountain trembled a foaming waterfall. This did not look peaceful at all. But when the king looked closely, he saw behind the waterfall a tiny bush growing in a crack on the rock, and in the bush a mother bird had built her nest. There, in the midst of the rush of angry water, sat the mother bird on her nest in perfect peace. Which was the picture that won the prize? The second picture, the one with the mother bird and the turmoil all around it. Why? Because, explained the king, peace does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. Peace means to be in the midst of all those things and still be calm in your heart. That is the real meaning of peace. And it's interesting that this friend, who's very much in tune, as a matter of fact, apologized at one point for the noise and for picking this place, and he said, there's probably a lesson in here for us. But of course, I couldn't hear the lesson, I thought, because of the noise that was happening in the diner. But the truth of the matter is, I could not connect because of the noise that was happening in my head. And once I remembered this story, and I said to myself, let's see if this really is true. And can I connect and be in peace even with this turmoil all around me? And the next thing I know, about an hour and a half had passed, and I was in tears at one or two points during the conversation. We had connected so much that we had completely forgotten and not even heard any more of the noise in the diner until we both said, okay, let's go. And then all of a sudden the noise came back and we entered the room again. And let me tell you, that was one of the most wonderful experiences that I've had in a long time. And there I thought I was here there to teach my friend a lesson or help him with something very important. And here he was, and we were helping each other with something that we didn't even expect. So how's that for sharing a little bit about myself? Well, I hope you all find peace. And in the meantime, though, talk about exciting moments. I am so excited about our guest tonight. I thank one of our producers, Mark Legere, for bringing this guest to us several months ago at a meeting, and we all fell in love with him, and he excited our brains, and there's just so much about him, and he's got so much to share. It's just a thrill to have him here. This man, he's a god in the music industry, in the movie industry. Listen to some of these names. He's been sound designer on feature films like Stargate, The Mask, Star Trek 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, does this sound familiar? Bram Stoker's Dracula. I mean, some of the most beautiful music, The Hunt for Red October, The Little Mermaid, Back to the Future 2 and 3, Die Hard 2, RoboCop 2, Gremlins, Poltergeist, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, the list goes on and on. Interactive games. He's done sound design for the James Bond Never Say Die interactive games and a whole slew of them. Also for theme parks. I mean, you hear his music all around. Commercials, a whole list of commercials. Jack in the Box, Pepsi, Madonna's Truth or Dare. I mean, Reebok. And then music videos. There's another list for you. Korn, Michael Jackson, Kenny Loggins, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg. He has done so much and has touched so many people. The thing that I find the best and the funniest, considering what we're going to talk about today, is that he did the music for Halloween, the whole series. And so I can't wait to talk to him about that. Please welcome to the show, Alan Howarth.
Hi, Felipe.
Hi, Alan.
Yeah. So it's true, I'm a Halloween guy.
You're the Halloween guy. I mean, you have freaked us out.
Well, you know, I was an artist for hire, and I have a skill set that can be applied to anything.
So right.
Much like, a gun can be used for peace or it can be used to kill people. You can use sound and music to scare the heck out of people, I'll give them inner peace.
Well, see, that's interesting because I know what we're going to be talking about today is a lot of that inner peace and connectedness. But I just think it's amazing that, I mean, who better? I mean, who better than you who knows how to connect in that scary place? And it's what we want when we go to those movies.
Right, yeah. We went there for that experience. A short history on that. I first came in contact with John Carpenter on a movie called Escape from New York in 1980.
Okay.
And so John Carpenter is actually the creator of Halloween. He wrote the theme, the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. That's his music, okay? He created all that stuff. But very shortly, for him, he was sort of tired of playing Halloween. He's a great director. He went on to other things. So when it came time for Halloween 2, the sequel, he was busy on the movie The Thing.
Okay.
And he sort of turned to me and said, Alan, I want you to do all that Halloween stuff. I'm too busy. So he just sort of tossed it over the fence to me, and I started to run with it. Well, then we did Halloween 2. Then there was a Halloween 3, which departed from the Michael Myers character and the idea of sort of broadening the Halloween franchise so we could do more Halloween stories. And that wasn't very popular, so they went back to Michael Myers, and that's when I did Halloween 4, 5, and 6. At that point, there was so many sequels, etc., that they retained the John Carpenter themes, but myself as the composer for those things, they now went next generation, you know, sort of involving other composers and stuff like that.
So, right.
So I was finished with the Halloween stuff probably in about 1996 or 97.
Okay.
But it lives on.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, scary movies are nothing without the music.
That's correct. You know, in the case of the original Halloween, John Carpenter showed it, screened the movie as a finished movie, but with no music, and people said it didn't work.
Mm.
And he turned around and scored it and put the music in, and all of a sudden it was infinitely more powerful, and all the scares worked. And, you know, in the scary business, we put things called stingers. So those are those loud sounds that go,
ah! Okay.
And, just, you know, like, and all of a sudden your attention is completely blown because some loud noise happened, even if nothing's happening. But at the same time, you're walking down a hallway and there's nothing. You're just looking around like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And it's the music, the little tings and the little discords that just hang there, you know, until
the moment. You're freaking me out now. I think it's hysterical that you're that guy. I mean, you're the guy that makes that happen. And the good news is that you are using this
You can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe. If you only let it be, you can do magic if you just believe. You only let it be. You can do magic if you just believe.
Man. Okay, so we had technical difficulties and now we're back on air. We've been talking so much, you know, Alan, the interesting thing about you is that we could talk for hours. You have so much to offer, from mathematics to engineering to science to music. You've developed something called RAW, R-A Music. Mm-hmm. And sorry about all of that, and thank you for filling us all in. We're all here enjoying it, and we're all on pins and needles waiting to see how all of what you just related relates to music. So,
we're going to rewind a little bit here.
Well, we've got some of it recorded, so let's in a nutshell.
All right, so in a nutshell, RAW music, the name Ra comes from Amun-Ra, the sun god Amun-Ra, and that was chosen by Wesley Bateman, who was the author of a book called The Rods of Amun-Ra.
Okay.
The Rods of Amun-Ra was a mathematical analysis of the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Okay.
So Wes, in his infinite wisdom, decided that edifice, that structure, is a mathematical model which repeats over and over again some higher knowledge. So he spent 25 years looking at every angle, how high, how wide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and called the mathematics of the original architect Ra mathematics. So the Ra mathematics is senior to Ra music.
Okay.
So there's this 800-page book. I read the whole book front to back. And at the end of the book, it becomes clear that there are two ratios that are part of the mathematics. Phi, P-H-I, phi, which is the golden mean, or 1.618, and pi, which is the ratio of a circle to its diameter. And both of these numbers are called irrational in the mathematical system. Rational. They don't make any sense. Well, they don't resolve. But from my viewpoint, they're numbers from the infinite. They're from a higher dimension. And that's why they don't resolve in the third dimension.
Now, don't resolve meaning like they keep going on and on and on and on without
stopping,
right? Exactly.
Right? Like, they put a computer on to calculate the value of pi, and it went to a million places and never repeated two numbers in a row.
Okay.
It was always flipping the numbers over and over again.
All right.
So it's an infinite number.
Right, okay.
Hence irrational. And also this 1.618, da-da-da-da-da-da, that goes on forever, is the phi ratio, which describes the golden mean. But they are real numbers in that they are in geometry. So if we consider the phi ratio stuff, that is all the physical ratio. So as an example, if you look at your own body, and you look at your first finger, and you look at the length of the first knuckle from your fingernail to the first place where it bends,
okay.
and call that one unit.
Okay.
The next length of your finger is 1.618 times longer, or 5 times longer.
Really?
And if you compare the length of the next one as a 1 to the one here, that one's 1.618 times longer than the next one. So if you bend your finger, you actually see a Fibonacci curve starting to happen.
And that's for everybody, not just yours?
That's for everybody.
Okay.
I mean, there could be some subtle changes.
Right.
But the point is, whoever designed the human body used this ratio over and over and over again. And so like a repeating
wow.
formula.
Somehow, where did he get the music, though, out of the pyramid?
All right, so let's continue. So let's just, we don't skip because I'm not sure what we missed here. So in the same way, the spherical geometry, as in the beginning, in the beginning was the word in Genesis 1, right? So that word was a vibration.
Right.
Vibration, it could have been, it could have been part sound, it could have been part love, it could have been part light, it could have been part, we don't know because we weren't there, but it all emitted circularly as a sphere, a ball. And it starts to emit, and that's the forming of this universe. So the spherical geometry is the higher dimension of creation. And as that vibration condenses or slows down from love to light to physical matter, there's these pyramidal converters, like prisms, that slow things down.
Wow.
And eventually, it comes into time-space, which is what we're experiencing now.
Wow.
But we all agree we have a spirit that's senior to our physical body that's sort of, we're riding around in the third dimension in a third-dimensional experiential body with that as eyes and ears and smells and tastes and stuff like that, and we experience it. But we're still, the spirit is having, going for a good ride here, and eventually we give up the body and we carry on.
Okay, so it all starts as love, and then it comes down
to light.
To light, and from the light to?
Light to actual physical time-space.
Okay.
So,
and in the physical times, where is music in that? Is it at love?
Yes, music. It was music in the first place. It was about music.
Oh, because it's all vibration. Oh, okay. Okay. So it's now music that we could hear.
Right. Right. So if you think about bandwidth, we all talk about bandwidth, right? So the bandwidth of sound of what our ear sense is from about 20 cycles to about 20,000 cycles. And that's when you're probably 16 and you still have good hearing. And eventually that all rolls off, mostly in the high end. The high end kind of rolls off.
But so there's still music, so to speak, above that and below that. We just don't hear it.
Yeah, well, our dogs hear it.
Yes, okay.
And the birds hear it. And you know, and so this is where. So let's go back to where did the music come out of the pyramid? I think that was the question
right.
you asked. All right, so at the end of Wes's book of the analysis of the pyramid, he suggested there was frequencies that were described by the pyramid mathematics. And being a musician, my antenna went up, oh, I got to know this. So it was. There was only 200 copies in the world of this book. You print them up down at the copy store. But his phone number was there. I dialed him up, and I said, hey, Wes, I just read your book. This is fascinating. Can you tell me more? Well, number one, he was thrilled that somebody actually read his book.
Mm-hmm.
And second, he even called him up to talk about it.
All 800 pages.
Yeah, exactly. and so my initial phone calls with him were like lessons in raw mathematics. He was trying to get me on board to understand. And it took a little while. It was simple, but it took a little while to kind of grasp where he was coming from because it's a unique perspective that really launches this stuff.
So we know that music and math, there's a correlation here. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. No, there's no question about it. An artist, a musician, manipulates sound. I mean,
okay.
the simplest definition of music is the alternation of sound and silence.
Interesting.
Right, that's the simplest, that's basic.
So profound.
You know, it's quiet, and then you make a noise, and it's quiet again, and make another noise. Whether it's a drum or a voice or anything. So once you start doing that, then we get into time, and time has ratios, right? Like 4-4 time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. It's math.
Right.
It's all mathematical, calculated stuff. And then it has frequencies in it, which we now know that a frequency doubles. So the note A, as an example, at 440 cycles, which is the standard today in Western culture,
right.
double that and make it 880, it's the octave higher. And have it, it goes down to 220, is below. So math is all over the place in music.
Okay, so when you go to hear the symphony and you hear this note being played, and then all the instruments start to play the note too, and everybody's
mm-hmm.
tuning to that
yeah, sure.
note.
Yeah.
That is the note A.
Right.
And
yeah.
that's at 440 is
right.
what we're tuning to. That's what we always hear.
Right.
Okay. And Now, I think you're about to suggest that there's something other that we should be tuning to.
Right. Well, this is the result of the conversations with Wes. It's finally I convinced him to take the mathematics and have an experiment where we converted it to sound. You could actually hear a value. So I sat in his dining room up in Las Vegas, and he had an oscillator, like a bench oscillator. So it's got a number. You can dial up, 400, da 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 da, right. And it has decimal points, and one's another six. So it's very precise. And he dials up the number 423.9705267.
Okay.
And that's some number that he's gotten from the pyramid mathematics.
All right.
But to me, it's just going, boo, that's all I care about, right?
Okay.
But I'm sitting at an electronic keyboard, and the keyboard is tuned initially to the standard of 440.
Right.
And I play the A on the piano, goes, bing, 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 bing. And I play the note that he's got, bing, bing, bing. It's a little flatter. So I have to go, nee, 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 and detune the piano a little bit to match the A note of the oscillator to the A note of the piano. So now the piano's been detuned or made flat. Now, in musical terms, we say that it's about 5/8 flat. Okay. So it's not all the way down to A flat yet. It's in the crack.
Okay.
So the point is we've now tuned the reference frequency of the A and all the other notes on the piano 5/8 flat.
Okay.
And I play the piano. And I'm playing a little bit. I sit there and I go, this sounds like a 17th century piano. Now, I really don't know what a 17th century piano is, but it's my impression. It's my first. Sounds old.
Huh.
And I guess that was my way to try it. But Wes goes, you're right. I go, what do you mean, Ronnie? He says, I'm telling you, this was the tuning in the 17th century. You were absolutely right.
Oh, wow.
So I did some research on the internet, and I found a website that had the history of the tuning fork. It's a piano tuner's site, right?
Right.
And so it went back to 1640, and it had measured the frequency of the note A in various instruments throughout history. So at 1640, it was like at 457, and they know that because some organs still exist in some cathedral, and they could measure it.
Oh, wow.
And then there was another one that was somewhere around 415 or something like that, and that was in 1690.
Right.
Well, then the third one in the list is in the year 1711. The first tuning fork was invented by this guy named John Shore. He was like the trumpet major in the King's Orchestra or something like that.
Okay.
And the frequency was the same frequency that Wes was telling me from the pyramid. It was at 423.5, which, close enough. I mean, there was no calculators there.
Right.
But we know this because that tuning fork's still there, and they can measure it today and go, ooh, and it's the same note. Well, then it continues on that not only was John Shore on 423.5, but Mozart was at 421.
Which is very close.
This is very close. I mean, an average person can't hear the difference.
Right.
Only when you really compare the notes, you hear the beating.
But you could tell the difference from the 440,
tuned. Yeah, it's way down from the 440.
Wow, that's interesting.
And so this was the first discovery of raw music. Music described by the raw mathematics of the pyramid that we now make into a detuned version of Western
Right, well, it's
music.
Not really detuned, it's just tuned lower, or lower than what we're used to.
Right, yeah.
So
the reference frequencies are lower than what comes out of a standard record right now.
Right, so everybody pretty much in the industry, and actually my piano, is tuned to 440. So they start with that A note that we all know at mm-hmm. 440, and then they tune all the other ones. Is that like the Fibonacci tuning or no?
Well, actually, it's called the Bach ratios.
Okay. All right, we'll get into that. So they tune it all to that note. And so.
Yeah, they use that as the initial reference.
Right.
And then everything is a ratio or a double or a half or a quarter or a third of that.
Okay.
And that makes up the notes on a keyboard or a guitar or whatever.
And now you're saying that if we tune instead to that 440, if instead of doing that, we tune to the 423.9.
So just call it 424.
Okay, 424. Thank you.
Nobody's going to have the scientific oscillator to find that last 300th of a cycle.
Okay, so then music in studios could be recorded at this. Now, what difference does it make if the music is recorded at this new 424?
I'll answer that question, but I want to stop for a second.
Okay.
All right. Because there's a little more history that goes with the note.
Well, actually, I know you've got some exciting things to share with us, music and everything like that,
I'll cut to the chase. I experimented on myself as the first guinea pig.
Okay.
I retuned my instruments, and I was making this meditation CD called Paradise Within. And I was doing the whole thing in 440.
I have it. I like it. Thank you.
Good, good. And so I was all these were tuned to 440. I was going to just digitally, there's a digital pitch shift that you can do that would change the you know exactly enough to detune the whole track,
okay.
The whole audio track, down to the 424, and that was what the intention. Well, I got to the point where this girl I was working with, Siobhan, was going to be late. I was sitting in the studio by myself. And I just thought to her, you know, I'm going to try this just on myself. I'll be the guinea pig here. I'm going to detune the instruments. Like, you know, with electronic keyboards especially, it's very easy to detune them. It's all It's all in the a master tuning, and you can pull it down. So I pulled it down minus 64 cents.
Okay.
All right, that's the exact, we'll change your A440 to A424.
Okay.
And I started to play. Well, I had this unbelievably creative experience. I mean, Musicians dream for these moments. You know, they call it the hit in the pocket or the zone. Just stuff was flowing out of me. Just, I wrote three songs, and my recordings had no errors, no mistakes. It was perfect.
Wow.
I started to make perfect music.
Wow.
Because of the tuning.
Huh.
Who would have thought?
Now, if you had left it where it was, you say you wouldn't have had this experience.
No.
Well, and actually, you had been recording the whole album.
Yeah, I resurrected, and we were spending weeks in the studio, you know, a little phrase here and a little phrase there, and trying to imagine what it was going to be. And all of a sudden, it just started to flow, just like a live performance.
Okay, so is it like it sounds better, or it feels better?
Well,
or?
What's happening? Let's talk about why it works.
Okay.
All right. It turns out that as we sit here, we are third-dimensional creatures. We live on the planet Earth. And the planet Earth is giving off vibrations for its life force.
Okay.
When a person meditates, they actually slow down their consciousness. It's the idea of clearing the mind, finally getting to the point where, as you talked earlier, instead of having all this chatter, just quiet.
Right.
When you're quiet, you can sense things.
Right.
Well, it turns out that a person who arrives at the meditative state, their brain waves slow down, become synchronized to earth waves. And those earth waves are these notes that we're talking about.
So the earth makes a sound.
The earth is giving off the as a constant.
Okay, so there's an energy that the
there's
earth...
an energy, and these are called Schumann frequencies.
Okay.
Then there was also another study by a guy named Meggers who studied the resonance of lightning.
Okay.
So like when lightning goes... and it rings out, okay? The sound is traveling from the surface of the earth up to the ionosphere and back, and that becomes what's called a waveguide. It makes a certain wavelength.
Okay.
There's a distance there. Well, that distance is also this 10.6 cycles. Well, if you take 10.6, multiply 10, you get 106. Multiply it times 4, you get 424.
Wow. Wow, so there's that 424 number, and it keeps coming up, and it's got to be important, and it's got to do something. And to you, it inspired you.
It inspired me, right. To me, it inspired me. Because
you're connected to something.
Right, and it turns out that the frequencies of the music now are in with my brain waves.
Hmm.
Right? We have certain underlying frequencies of thought.
Right.
So the 440 is out of tune with those brain waves, and the 424 is in tune with the brain waves.
This is fascinating. And so when you're in tune, then things happen.
Things you arrive at a balance. The confusion, the extra stimulation of the world you're in is diminished, and your higher self, the spirit we talked about that's driving this third-dimensional body,
right,
can get through.
Okay, so here I am. I like music, and I'm listening to music, and all my music has been tuned to 440.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have taken this to a whole other step where now I could give you my music or put it somewhere on the web. And
right, so after this discovery and all this stuff, I'm sitting there going, this is pretty cool, but this is not just for me. How can I disseminate this? How can I put this in the hands of anybody?
It's very cool, actually.
And
you're
I
the
sat
guy.
There and I thought, you know, you can patent a process. I mean, I can't own 424. I mean, you tune your guitar to 424 and you're off on your own.
Yeah.
Right? But to kind of make a business out of this so it can support itself and have more websites and do more things.
Well, and help people because
and actually,
saying we could connect.
Well, as musicians, it's kind of obvious to us. If we got a Pro Tools or a Soundscape or a Soundforge, we could do this in our software. I mean, it's not. But I tried to patent the idea, the ratio, the exact setting you would do to one of those digital pitch shifters to make it happen.
Okay.
And protect that because I don't want people fooling with it. It's a very precise number. It's actually down to the atomic level. That's why all those extra decimal points.
Wow.
So we actually then went ahead and created a technology and put it on the rawmusic.com website. So you can go to rawmusic.com, and there's a little thing called Convert Your Music. And so you can take a file off your desktop, an MP3 or a WAVE is the only files we've got now, but you know we'll expand as we go because we're in the beginnings of this stuff. And you can upload it into the website, and the pitch changer is built into the website. So, you know, Jane Yoga from Iowa can do this. She doesn't need any technician or any heavy-duty software. It all lives at the other end in the website.
Well, I don't know if Jane did it, but I did it.
Okay.
I put my own music that I've recorded in there.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I sounded gooder.
this is the all the things that fall off of. Once you establish that, the tuning, there's a bunch of stuff that happens when you do this. Yes, you sounded better. I agree, you sounded better. There's no question about it because.
But it's still me. I don't understand how I sound better.
But all right. So what is art? Art is a communication. You are communicating to Mark with sound.
Okay.
I mean, you could also make other visuals, but just let's talk about the sound right now. So on 440, think of your radio station being not quite tuned with sharp signal.
A little static or something.
A little static. It's not pure.
Okay.
When you get to 440, it goes right into Mark.
Wow.
And Mark gets it.
Wow.
So your audience experiences music. You experience it. For sure.
Wow.
But then the way it goes out to other people is improved. So, therefore, you could do this to any recording. You can do this to a Beatles song. You can do this to Sting. You can do this to Megadeth. You could do this to whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, people
if it's 2 to 440, you can go and it'll increase the communication of the original artist. Now,
you have to try this. It's rawmusic.com, right?
RAMusic.com.
RAMusic.com. You have to try it.
This little thing is called Convert Your Music.
Right.
So you can upload, and you get a free one-minute demonstration. So you can decide if you like it or not.
Right.
But if you like it, then you can push the little buy button, and for 99 cents you can buy a raw converted version of that song and save it to your desktop.
That's so cool. Now let's let people hear what this can sound like.
We've talked about it. Let's listen to some music.
Okay. Cool. So what are we hearing first?
All right, so first I'm just going to have an example from an 18th century opera, and it's a single voice with just a what do you call it? A lute.
A lute? Okay.
And it's short. We kept all these short so we could just compare. So we're going to first hear it as it is originally from the CD.
Okay.
And then we're going to hear it one more time. Same piece of music. The only thing that's been done is that we digitally pitch shifted it down from 440 down to the 424 reference.
Okay. Let's see if we can hear the difference.
Go.
So that's how it was originally done.
Originally. Now we'll hear another version that the pitch has been shifted to the 440.
Wow.
Alright, so I actually checked in with some opera singers.
Okay.
And they said, oh yeah, we sing sharp today. It was lower in the old days.
Oh wow.
And some of the best opera singers actually asked the band to tune a little flat.
Wow.
Two things happened. They hit that pocket that we're talking about, and their high C isn't so high anymore. It's a little easier to get to.
Okay.
So it's a little opera star thingy they have the power to do.
Wow. And as well they should do. Let's hear some more. So that was opera. What else do you have?
So I have an example of a little violin concerto.
Okay.
A little Vivaldi piece. Again, a little 30 seconds. First we'll hear it from the CD, and then we'll hear the same thing again, retuned.
Okay. Bobby. You know, Alan, I hear the difference, but more than hear it, you know, you had given me a CD with all kinds of these. You had Beatles in there and some mm-hmm. rock songs and all that. And it was interesting because I never thought I'd feel the rock songs in my heart. I actually felt a difference, like my heart started to vibrate or something. I don't know if you brought any rock songs for us to hear.
I've got an Enya piece, and I have a Beatles and a John Lennon.
Oh, okay. But before we get to that, what is that? I feel...
All right, so it turns out that this 424 is actually tuned for the heart center and the heart chakra. And in the mathematics that Wes originally predicted, there was 9 formats, at least the ones that he discovered. He's now up to 12, but he got the 9 formats, and we've found that tuning now from 424 up to about 426.5 tuned it for the crown chakra, and
wow.
tuning it a little bit lower down to about 421.5 or something like that is down to the root chakra. So now if you were into sound healing or energy work,
right,
you could have the tracks in your session tuned to the area you're working on.
Wow. Wow.
Or you could take your client through a progression, and you
right.
start at the top and the bottom, or from the bottom to the top, and put them through a whole journey just by tuning whatever is their favorite music.
So that violin piece that we just heard, that was tuned to 424, and I felt it in my heart. So had it been tuned to whatever frequency it was that you said was the root, where our sexual energy or whatever
mm-hmm.
is, I mean, and et cetera is, I would feel it there and maybe
feel like dancing.
Interesting.
You know, have a little different movement to it. There was an organization called New Equations. They're up in San Anselmo, and they're headed up by Dr. Alan Sheets and Barbara Tobey. And they studied the Egyptian mythology in a book called The Temple of Man by Schwaller de Leibowitz. And in Schwaller de Leibowitz' book, he said that the Egyptian culture had 9 soul types.
Okay.
And the soul types correlate to the 9 chakras. But there's a whole behavioral, how you express yourself once you understand your soul type. So I had been picking this 424, one, because it was the center of the system. You could go higher or lower, that was like the middle. And then it turned out, I'm a soul type 6 and a heart person. So that's what sounded right to me.
Oh, right.
And I didn't even know that.
Right.
But it's the one I chose that sounded the best.
So let me ask you this. A person then that isn't necessarily a heart person, that they're more cerebral, would they have the same kind of experience if they hear the music?
I think yes.
This way?
Yes. Compared to the 440 version, it's still going to communicate in the heart center, and you're going to feel the love in it.
Because it's still like a shoe that fits right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But as we go farther into what we'll call advanced raw studies, on the website I'm going to put up a little test where the same music will be played 9 times. Each with each subtle different tuning. And you may not believe it, but when you do it, there's one of them that sounds better for you, and that helps identify your soul type.
Wow, that's going to be interesting, and that's where you're going to be taking Ra. But actually, we're still here. We have time for one more piece. Which piece?
Well, if we only have time for one more, can we go to the cut 5? It'd be cut 9, the last one.
Okay.
The John Lennon piece.
John Lennon. Okay.
This is
track 9.
This is a song, Mind Games. This one really gets it, and the over the first place.
Okay.
Were they in those minds?
Oh, that is amazing. So, okay. So now we've got this song. Now we want it in this version. So what do we do now? We go to your website and if we got
Mind Games, our little MP3 or whatever we got in iTunes,
right.
We just upload that to the raw website in the converter.
Right.
And then it'll be converted in the website. The technology's there.
Okay.
And then we can download the converted version, and it costs us 99 cents.
So we can take our favorite songs that already move us.
Right, exactly.
And put them right into our heart.
Right, exactly.
Even more than they already are.
Exactly.
Alan, you have to promise to come back. I mean, because we haven't even scratched the surface.
No, this is deep.
You're deep.
Let's just give a little peek to our audience, right? So first it's on the website. Then the next thing, we want to put a feature on the website. You could listen to any internet radio streaming through the website and on the fly have this happen. And that would be a little subscription service. Then we're also talking about raw converters that are little boxes that you could put on the output of your stereo, and it would convert on any music on the fly through that.
Wow.
Now let's talk about licensing to like Sirius Radio. And we have raw reggae and raw rock and raw classical streaming into automobiles across the world. And they're listening to their favorite music and they're feeling more peaceful and they don't know why.
Wow.
Road rage goes down.
And here you are. You're using music and your talent to bring peace into the world in such an amazing way. And you're changing the way we're looking at music. And who better from you? Boy, you run the gamut. We started off with Halloween, and here we are changing the world through peace and music by going through this raw system.
Well, consider this. I mean, I just turned 60. All right, I'm 60 years old now. We all go through our various decades of what interests us.
Right.
And so I was into all these genre movies in the 80s.
Right.
But then in the 90s, I got
I wasn't criticizing. I'm just saying.
But if we have all our own journeys,
right.
Grow up.
Yeah.
You know? And I've kind of grown up, and I've embraced this now as my life's work. I'm going to do this till I drop. There's no way I'm retiring. I have no interest. I'm having too much fun.
Well, we're glad you're not going to retire from this. We're going to want to know more. I can't wait to. I mean, you touched on so many things that just got to my mind racing, and I know we don't have time to do it now, but you promise you're going to come back.
I promise to come back. And one more little message to our audience. So go to rawmusic.com. Check
right.
it out. There's a little video that you can send a link to your friends, and they can check out a little summary of what I just said.
Oh, good.
In a YouTube video. And then also we have a Raw social group. So please join the social group, and we can start to communicate on the website and ask questions and do all that stuff.
That's great. That's Raw as in R-A music. Alan Howarth, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, now we have a segment which we like to call the Luminary List. And for that, we have our own resident publicist, Stacey Hess, who always has such great people that she's always got some fascinating people. And we also have Dorothy coming up. So before we get on to that, I want to thank again Alan Howarth because it's just a – he's taking a bow. Stick around so we could have party afterwards.
We'll visit afterwards.
Okay. Stacey, what do you got for us today?
Shoes.
Shoes?
Shoes.
Oh, okay. A girl who has shoes.
Yay! A girl's best friend, shoes. I love shoes. Don't you love shoes?
I like shoes. I mean, I need shoes, I think.
You know what? Children need shoes, too.
Okay.
Children in other countries need shoes.
Oh, this is the guy who's actually pictured on Facebook, thanks to our producer, Mark Skelton, in a clown outfit with Gucci shoes. And I'm saying, I like shoes.
Exactly. No, so our luminary tonight is Tom's Shoes. And they're from right here in Los Angeles. And they are a pretty amazing company. There's this guy named Blake who started the company. And just 3 years ago, he was traveling around Argentina and some other places. And he discovered that the children there, for the most part, didn't have shoes.
Mm.
And so he came back to the United States. They started this company called Tom's Shoes, and for every pair of shoes they sell, they give a pair to a child in need.
Wow.
And so far, they've given over 140,000 pairs of shoes away.
140,000?
That's just since 2006.
Wow.
So their plan is to obviously continue to give all these shoes away, and they're hoping to give away 300,000 pairs of shoes by the end of 2009.
Wow.
So it's important, right, that children have shoes, because, and this is mostly in other countries, but the main mode of transportation is walking.
Yes.
And so these children are walking to school, they're walking to the doctor, and if their feet are injured and cut, they can get parasites and they can get ill. So this is a man who started a company that's literally changing the world.
Wow.
So
wow.
Everybody should
go out one foot at a time.
One foot at a time, or hopefully two, actually.
Yes, actually, that's right. He's not giving them one pair,
no,
one
giving
shoe.
Them an actual two shoes.
Okay, two.
One for each foot. But everybody should go buy a pair of Tom's shoes, because then a pair will be given to children.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do we find out about Tom's shoes?
So they have a website. It's just Tom's, T-O-M-S, shoes.com. And the really cool thing is that my friends Jason and Hatch have this soundstage in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
And just over the wall from their soundstage is Tom's headquarters and their warehouse.
Oh, so have you got to meet them?
I haven't met them yet, but I have seen all their shoes in the warehouse.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah,
well, when you meet them, I want to meet them too.
I know, definitely.
They sound like great people. We should have them on the show.
I know.
Great mind things alike.
Yay! Or same gutter, I'm not sure which, but...
No, great mind.
I'm thinking like, okay.
Well, thank you, Stacey.
You're welcome.
That's a cool one.
This has been a week of shoe themes, as you know.
Yes. We'll have to make a shoe show.
A shoe? Oh, yes.
Yeah, it would be a really good shoe. It'll be a really good shoe. Thank you, Stacey. All right. So now we have Dorothy Lee, who is our resident spiritual cosmic advisor, who's always got something special to share with us in the segment we love to call State of the Universe Address.
Hi. It seems to me that everywhere I look these days, I see one of my favorite Gandhi quotes, "Be the change you wish to see in the world." Many of my friends use it below their signature lines on their email. And I make it my personal daily mission to embody this quote. And I know that if we all choose to become the change we wish to see, what a wonderful world it will be. As I was looking for something in my document folder today, I found this interesting quote from an unknown monk in 1100 A.D. that takes Gandhi's quote a step further. The monk said, "When I was a young man, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I tried to change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I couldn't change the town, and as an older man, I tried to change my family. Now, as an old man, I realize the only thing I can change is myself. And suddenly I realized that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on our town. Their impact could have changed the nation, and I could indeed have changed the world." Wow. My hope is that each of us will take to heart the wisdom shared in this quote. Let us begin to become the change we wish to see in the world by looking within and seeing what we might wish to change in ourselves. When I ask my clients what the change is that they wish to see in the world the most, the answer is always world peace. If each of us chooses to be peaceful within, we will see peace in our world. It is really that simple. There will be world peace when collective consciousness imagines and visualizes peace in our individual hearts. There will be peace in the world when each of us chooses to live from our hearts and not our heads. So the question is, how do we do this? It's really quite simple. Every morning is a brand new, fresh beginning. When we choose to start each day by connecting with Mother Earth and with our Mother, Father, God, our spirit, when we take a few moments to remember that God is love and love is God and that love is the answer no matter what the question may be, when we choose to be the love we have incarnated to be, the rest becomes easy. I start each day with a morning invocation, and the last four positive affirmations of my daily invocation are four thoughts which come from Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. The first agreement, be impeccable with your word. Speak with integrity. Say only what you mean. Avoid using the world the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. Number two, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. What others say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream. When you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. Number three, don't make assumptions. Find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. With just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. Always do your best is number four. Your best is going to change from moment to moment. It will be different when you are healthy as opposed to sick. Under any circumstances, simply do your best, and you will avoid self-judgment, self-abuse, and regret. By choosing to live by these four agreements, I changed my life for the better, and I know you will too. I have become the change I want to see in this world. Because I live by these agreements, I am at peace. Imagine what a wonderful world it will be when everyone becomes impeccable with their word, when everyone stops taking things personally, when everyone stops making assumptions, and when everyone does the best they can. We will then truly have a new world order that serves us all. Until next week, please choose to live from your hearts and to love yourself enough to make very conscious and elegant choices. And please know that you are loved, you are lovable, and you are loved.
Thank you, Dorothy Lee, and thank you, friends. This is our show for today. We'd like to also thank again Alan Howarth for being on our show and invite you to learn more about him by going to our show archives on our website and clicking on the respective links for more information. We look forward to being together with you again next week when our guest will be Charles Hill, founder and president of United Steps, a nonprofit organization addressing homelessness in Los Angeles using a one-on-one partnership program. It is a show sure not to be missed. Remember, you can keep the conversation going during the week by visiting us and writing us on our website at Life Changes with Filippo, and connect with us on our Life Changes with Filippo Facebook fan page, and for that matter, any of our personal Facebook pages. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, Ion Ways Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles. Learn more about them by visiting our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our segment hosts, Dorothy Lee and Stacey Hess, our show producers, Mark Skelton, John Snow, and Mark Lejeure, and Seth, our engineer, thank you for joining us and being part of this show and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao!
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next time.